Coming up on Tech News Today, the cost of having Google Search on your iOS device. Uber cuts prices for its third year straight. Microsoft releases souped-up surfaces. This week's gaming roundup with Sam Moskovich, and so much more. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1434, recorded Friday, January 22nd, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Credit Karma. This year, you may not make it to the gym every day, but you can work out your credit score with Credit Karma. Get your free credit report at creditkarma.com and see why over 45 million people have joined. That's creditkarma.com.
And by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines convenient packaging, modern technology, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the tech news, some of the tech news, all of the tech news, with people who love technology. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there and ready for a Friday worth of tech news. And actually, Fridays are generally kind of slow tech news days, but we've got a decent amount of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. I'm excited. I am Megan Maroney.
Oh, well, and I'm Jason. You kind of already introduced me, at least by name. And we have today, well, you've seen the last couple of Fridays, we've had him on for the gaming segment. And this week, we're inviting Sam Moskovich on for the entire episode from Ars Technica. Sorry. How's it going? Are you gaming right now?
I'm hardcore gaming right here on this black screen, yeah.
Put that down. You've got a show to do, man. Good to have you on for the full episode today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'll see how much I can not cuss today. Yeah, that's my goal. Zero. We'll see.
You know, we have editors for that, so it's okay. It's okay. Hey, really quick before we start the news, happy birthday, Vine, celebrating 3 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that means we all have to go on Vine and record a six-second video as celebration. I don't know. Have you recorded a six-second video on Vine yet?
No, I'm not a Viner.
No.
I need at least 10 seconds to do anything of worth.
At least 10 seconds. That's my requirement. That's a new service that's coming out someday soon.
Yeah.
So there we go. Happy birthday. All right. So let's get to our top stories. Yesterday, we mentioned that Oracle was spilling some beans in its copyright court case with Google regarding the company's use of Java and Android. Transcripts of last week's hearing also revealed that Google paid Apple $1 billion during 2014 in order to be the default search provider on iPhones and iPads and other iOS devices, basically. It's also revealed that the revenue share was 34%. So that's a figure that we have, yet we don't know exactly who's that attributed to. Is that Apple's take? Is that Google's take? Is that on top of the billion? You know, what? Basically, we don't know much more than a 34% revenue share there. But you can assume that it's more, right? Like it's $1 billion. I'm guessing that's $1 billion for access to the device. And then beyond that, 34% or whatever they take from there. So I don't know. What do we think here? Is that a lot of money? Is that $1 billion, Sam?
Is that a lot of money? Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Although one of our readers at Ars Technica pointed out the interesting break between Apple selling hardware and Google not, in terms of both companies' numbers being disclosed. So it's not that's the sort of thing. It's easy to get that comparison sort of mixed up. And I'll be curious. I would love to break down even more of their internally disclosed numbers. It's amazing that we got this much information.
Yeah, I mean, this bean spilling has been happening over the last couple of days from this Oracle lawyer, and I just don't get it because this is such important information that both Google and Apple keep very close to the vest, and she's just letting it go. And then Google and Apple, they're bringing it back in. So, you know, so the court documents were then closed. That's why we only know 34%. We don't know if that was Apple's take or Google's take. And we don't know anymore because then they close it. But you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Those numbers are still out there. That's the interesting part. The other interesting part, I think, is that a lot of us who use Apple products and love Apple products, and Tim Cook himself often criticizes Google's use of our information in their search. So now we're learning that Apple benefits financially a lot from Google search. Whether it's 34%, whether they're getting 34% or they're getting the rest, that's a lot of money they're making off search. So those of us who say, well, that why I use Apple products because they don't use my data like Google does. So I use an iPhone, I use a MacBook, I use an iPad. I also use all of Google's services. So I'm all in, and it sounds like Apple is too.
Complicit. 34%. Well, of course, Apple's all about making money. And I think what it boils down to as far as, you know, as far as Apple's concerned is, you know, who else would they put on there as a search provider that's more more synonymous with internet search than Google is right now? Apple is all about providing its users with the best of the best. That's kind of what they're committed to. And I think when it comes to search, it's hard to argue that Google's kind of the big daddy in the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it would be strange for them to not go in that direction, I suppose. And then you also have to kind of compare, like, okay, $1 billion sounds like a lot of money. In Apple terms, that's really, I mean, it's crazy how not a lot of money $1 billion is to Apple. They, you know, revenue averages $58 billion each quarter. Mm-hmm. So this is pennies on the dollar, basically. But yeah, but provides a lot of value, I think, to iOS users. And that's kind of the reason why it's there.
Also interesting how many people don't change the default. Because to me, like if I, on my iPhone, the default was Bing or whatever, I would switch it to Google. But I guess a lot of people just don't. They're counting on, Google's counting on a lot of people just not doing that. So paying the money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those of us who make it our business to read the Apple virtual reality tea leaves were handed another clue to the company's VR future today. The Financial Times says Apple has hired virtual reality expert Doug Bowman. He's the director of the Center for Human-Computer Interactions at Virginia Tech. Apple did not comment on the story, but this is pretty interesting. I know that you follow VR pretty closely, Sam. What do you think about this?
I mean, every single company at this point is getting at least some sort of consultant, some sort of plan. It's very easy right now for big companies to hire just a couple of people, have some fluency, some conversation in a very wait-and-see approach. Nobody from Google beyond Cardboard has any obvious plans to make some sort of product. There's enough other people making products, so it doesn't shock me at all I would imagine every single tech company is looking just in case, because you know what's happening now is going to be useful research 5-10 years down the line when the average user is not terrified of putting on a headset and obscuring their vision while in a virtual world so that robbers can come in and take all of their real life things.
Yeah, I mean, you have to imagine, like you say, Sam, everybody's working on VR. If not because, you know, they want to do something now, but to protect themselves long term. If VR truly is the platform of the future, which who knows if it is or it isn't, but it's certainly on the table, Apple of all companies definitely wants to have a hand in there as early as possible and know where they're going with it. This could also not necessarily be a VR hire. I mean, I'm sure he's got a background in VR. He's also got a background in things like 3D UI, three-dimensional user interface, which could be handy in, let's say, their car. You know, their car that isn't confirmed to have, you know, exist in some way, shape, or form, but everybody kind of knows that they're working on something along those lines. Some sort of, you know, UI component to that. He's also has a background in working with kind of like, So this is navigating kind of like 3D spaces with commodity hardware. If you show the other video that's in the doc, you can see some research that he did around using a Leap motion controller to do kind of hand gestures for navigation. And this could have application in, you know, a car setting as well. If you can imagine kind of having like, hands-free, motions to do different
or drive your car like Superman, like this guy.
I know, right? Like, this is awesome. Now, car, basically.
I'm super interested in 3D interfaces in general, because augmented reality is really where the future is. The idea that you wear a pair of Google glasses that aren't nearly as ugly or terrifying, where you can have interfaces appear in your near vision, whether it's you see your web browser sort of floating in front of you, or you walk past a building and it's got information like a phone number, how to reserve, what the menu is. If augmented reality interfaces really happen, Apple, I would be shocked to not see at the very forefront of saying, here's how you are going to interface. Here's how you're going to control everything that you use with a computer. They did so with the iPhone in a way that nobody else ever did, and I'm sure that's on top of everybody's mind in the 5 to 10 year plan from right now.
And it looks like he has a little bit of background in augmented reality. Also, he got a $100,000 research grant from Microsoft for using the HoloLens to study on collaborative analysis of large-scaled mixed reality data. So I guess we've talked about this. Mixed reality is now the term that they're using for consumers, because augmented sounds scary for some reason.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. And not to be outdone, Google has hired a global VR evangelist for YouTube. Scott Brook comes from Jaunt. They're the creators of a professional-grade stereographic cinematic VR camera codenamed Neo. I don't know anything about Jaunt. Do either of you have experience with Jaunt?
Not aware of Jaunt, and definitely no experience with it.
if it has the word Neo in it, I just assume there's a colorful pill involved.
Okay, before we move on, so we're following this story so closely, like every hire, everything that they purchase. I'm just curious, because I was sort of on sabbatical when Facebook bought Oculus, did everybody follow Facebook's interest in virtual reality, or was the purchase of Oculus more of a surprise?
Oh, that was the Facebook purchase was a little surprising. I know they were definitely out there to be acquired. I'd seen the guys at conventions. It was very clear that they needed some big investor in order to really turn their project, because they were just doing off of eBay parts as far as the very beginning. I got to try out one of the first Oculus headsets, which was just foam and duct tape. It was actually pretty incredible for the sales pitch version, but the fact that Facebook really jumped in just made it so clear that this was a company that said, you know, gaming is one thing, but we're going to have a social network with some sort of virtual presence combined. It's the future. It's the future of mousing, of interfacing. The idea of a 3D mouse is really this thing that I'm super obsessed with lately, that the idea of a touchscreen is going to seem so old fogey in 12, 15 years. I really think that's going to happen. And so I think Facebook saw this is an opportunity to say, wait, we could be an Apple, we could be a Google, and we can get in on something that they are still kind of clueless about by being with a company with already 5 years experience. So the Facebook getting them was sort of surprising, but once they did so, their plans, the dominoes, seem to really roll out in terms of where they want to be.
Yeah, and I feel like the Facebook Oculus kind of collaboration,
marriage.
It was an acquisition. Yeah, marriage. There we go. That's a better word. It's less than a collaboration. They bought them. But I feel like that kind of, at least from my perspective, kind of changed the conversation about VR from being, oh, VR is this futuristic thing that's going to, you know, be an interesting kind of like gaming platform, and turned it more into, no, you know what? It's a computing platform potentially. This is a platform that everything exists on, and not just, you know, these kind of splashy demos, but like we could run the internet off of this if we think about it, you know, and in broader terms. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what the Oculus merger seemed like for me anyways. Uber is dropping its rates for the third year straight, with a 20-45% drop in 100 cities of the U.S. at a time when it's actually losing an insane amount of money, still trying to somehow turn a profit by the end of the second quarter of 2016. What were you saying, Sam?
I was coughing, actually.
I thought you were like champing at the bit to get in there. You were like, no, please just end so I can talk about this.
Oh, I just had a Lyft driver pick me up from the airport the other day. He hid his mustache because it's not allowed in Seattle. But he was much complaining about Uber's price drops lately and how that's just coming right down to the drivers. Yeah. In this way that drivers have no real say in it. And that's why these sort of stories about unionization really could have clustering effects. But yeah, it's pretty intense with these sort of price drops. Like, who ultimately foots the bill for that? Is it the driver? Is it the investor? It's all a mess to me, but I'm going to enjoy the cheap rides with incredibly chatty drivers in the short term. Really need to talk about all four of your kids? That's fine. Thank you, sir.
Well, the VCs are certainly subsidizing your rides, so you are getting the benefit of this. Uber has said that it believes in price cuts when demand slows, so obviously demand appears to be slowing. In some cases, drivers are actually complaining that the per-mile rate doesn't end up covering gas and depreciation of the vehicle. So they kind of think, well, we feel like we're working for free. Mm-hmm. At that point. And then what's the point? And like you say, Sam, Lyft is also, you know, cutting its fares to compete. They kind of have to. It's like this race of the the drive share right now, the ride share.
And the drivers are the ones suffering because, I mean, Uber, we've heard like leaked documents that Uber's lost a ton of money. They lose per ride, but they're gaining ridership. And then there's this, you know, so it does seem like, once again, they're not really taking into concern the drivers themselves in this. So it's sad. But I do think, I know I like to say that something is the Kleenex of something, but I do think Uber is the Kleenex of ride hailing. And when I say that, it's just like you hear that now, like everyone that doesn't follow tech news as much as I do, just Uber or take an Uber, you know, Uber there. So it does feel like there's really no room for Lyft.
Uber translates to ride share for a lot of people's. Interesting little fact, or rather kind of taking the figures and framing it a little differently. Uber lost more money in 3 quarters than Amazon lost at the peak of the dot-com boom. That's $1.7 billion lost on $1.2 billion of revenue. So we're talking a lot of money in the red. I don't know. I don't know what this leads to, because we are always talking about rideshare and this being kind of the next generation of, you know, how people choose to get around and everything. But when you're losing that much money, I mean, I think they were expecting to be in the green by the end of Q2 of this year, and doesn't really sound like that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, that's the kind of thing where the market is so nimble for these sorts of apps. It may only be 3 years before another company shows up, and consumer loyalty doesn't really matter when a service shows up that actually works. So maybe there will be a Snapchat for Uber that, you know, all the old people use Uber and they're made fun of by their kids for it, et cetera, et cetera. I'm curious how that all really plays out over the next few years.
Yeah, your car will drop you off and then disappear forever.
Right. And not to be, I'm offering this as a service to those on the East Coast, not to be part of Uber's PR, but they did say that they are capping surge pricing in New York City because of the snowstorm, or Snowmageddon, as we on the West Coast like to call it, because it's warm here.
Ageddon, all the things. Yes, yeah. That's what we do.
Yes. Earlier this week, we told you that Netflix was planning to block people who were using proxies and VPNs to access content that wasn't available in their region. Now, we remarked on the fact that they didn't say how they were going to do it. And yesterday, users in Australia said Netflix was, in fact, blocking some access to some content. But today, an interesting report in VentureBeat said that not only will this kind of blocking not work, Netflix knows full well that it won't work. Sam, what do you think about this kind of VPN? What's Netflix's game here?
I don't know that they're necessarily looking for PR as much as there is some basic cat and mouse stuff you can do. And anything that they can do, it's very rare that a customer is really going to flip out and be outraged and go, "How dare you, Netflix?" There's not that many options. So any sort of blocking that can be done is fine. I just think it's very cheap for them to just lay down some IP blocks. You know, that's just one guy's normal, like, do this for a couple hours a day sort of thing. So it's very little effort on their back to potentially change the way people use the service. It's a fun thing to talk about on our end because it's very annoying, and we don't want these sort of dumb restrictions when we can, you know, hop around the globe digitally to get at this sort of stuff. But, you know, it's not in their business interest to make it easier for a Canadian to watch stuff in the United States.
Well, because they're trying to appease the copyright holder, right? I mean,
absolutely,
to say we're doing this.
We're actually doing something versus not at all.
Yeah.
Right. And so if an end user figures out the very simple ways to kind of get around it, and the copyright holders feel like enough smoke has been blown, then everybody kind of wins, and Netflix just keeps on printing and making money.
Well, a few weeks before their announcement last week that we talked about, that kind of was the announcement of the action, which is now happening. Netflix, Neil Hunt, who's the chief product officer, said at CES, basically said, you know, that they rely on blacklists of VPN exit points. That's maintained by companies that make it their job to maintain those lists. Once those VPN providers are on a blacklist, it's easy for them to move that IP address, you know, to a different IP address and basically dodge and evade and that sort of stuff. And, you know, so in light of their announcement last week, which was like, we're cracking down, we're going to hit this hard, you know, yet a few weeks prior, kind of admitting like, this is not trivial. It's totally a game of whack-a-mole, and they're just going to keep doing this, and it's pretty easy for them to do this. So what can you do? But I guess a little bit of effort is better than none at all. So Microsoft launched a couple of new versions of its Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book convertibles. These are more beastly configured than any before them. Both devices have 1 terabyte of storage. That's twice as much as the previous maximum configuration with 6th gen Intel Core i7 processors and 16 gigs of RAM. These are also a $500 premium over the 512 gig models. They're on sale in the U.S. And Canada, and you can get them through Microsoft's online store. So if storage is like close to your heart, if you need all that storage, you don't want to live your life in the cloud and you need that terabyte of storage on this, then at least now you have an option. So I guess that's better.
And you forgot to mention the gold Surface Pen for $60. You forgot. I'm a big fan of
expensive
styluses. So Alex, you are the biggest Surface fan I know. Are you going to get this gold Surface Pen for $60?
I love my Surface, but I think the whole gold trend is kind of dumb anyway, so I don't really care for it. But if you're like an executive who needs all their gold stuff, then sure, that's a good way to cash in on that trend.
Okay, what about the other Surfaces?
It's too pricey for my blood.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if we were going to buy you one, or Leo was going to buy you one.
Oh, well, then sure, yeah. Okay. I'll take a Surface Pro 4 with 1 terabyte, yeah.
Okay.
Surface Pro 4, by the way, $26.99. That's what it's going to set Leo back when he buys you one of those.
Hey, Leo, you here?
unfortunately, he's not listening right now, and he's going to miss this message. Well, you could have asked for the Surface Book. That's $31.99. $3,199.
Personally, I prefer the Surface Pro tablet form factor than the book.
Okay. All right. What about you, Sam?
Are
you
love a $3,200 Surface Book. That sounds like a good thing to just happen upon. Surface Book is really, I'm so impressed by its combination. Now that I've even used it once, I guess tried a demo very briefly. And now whenever I'm out and about and I use a laptop, I feel like I'm already in the past. I already feel like I would be balked by children for having this antiquated thing when I could just snap the screen off and whip around with that. And I know that the first wave had just a couple of issues with buttons and with some software. So I'm actually really curious if this newer, more powerful Surface Book for any reason comes combined with some tweaks and the fixes for the few complaints that are out there. Because like with the original Surface tablet, the Surface Book has just enough problems that have been reported to make someone like me go, why would I get the first gen of that? I will wait. The price will come down. The performance will come up, which was a bummer for me because this was one of those first times I've ever seen a Microsoft hardware product come out. And I said, first time, got it right. Unfortunately, just a couple of nickels here and there have actually proven that's not 100% there, like 95%, which is good for Microsoft.
Well, Mark Gurman released a smattering of rumors about Apple products today. In case you're not familiar with 9 to 5 Mac, these are just rumors, but Gurman has amazing sources, and the rumors very often tend to be true. Let's start with the iPhone. There are some iPhone rumors that we have. There's not going to be a... So there were some photos that were floating around of the iPhone yesterday, and some sites posted photos of a smaller phone with claims that it was an updated smaller 6S, but that's not true, says Gurman. It's an update to the 5S, but it's going to be called the 5SE.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
Not the 5C.
You could do a gangsta and go 5SA.
Yeah, it could, yeah.
I didn't think about that way.
5SA. So it's an update to the 5S that was released in 2013. According to Gurman, the forthcoming iPhone SE that is for special edition will be the same size and shape as the 6S and include upgraded internals, including curved glass, the same megapixel rear camera, and a 1.2 megapixel selfie camera, same as the iPhone 6S. Also, it will include live photos. It will come with the same color options as the 6S line. That's silver, space gray, and rose gold, which is also pink. There will be no 3D touch. So these are all rumors. We don't know if they're true, but his rumors are often true. This is an interesting thing. I mean, they've not really gone backwards like that as far as I know.
Right, and it's almost like they're taking kind of the old body and kind of sprucing it up and re-releasing it. I mean, I'm not an iOS guy. I'm not an iPhone guy. So I don't know. Are you missing out with an A8 chip versus the modern chip? Like what? I don't really know personally what you miss out on with that.
I think the market really, there's still not very much in the way of the small phone now. Every company is going giant. So I think to some extent, Apple has a lot of people out there who go. I know so many people who reach out to me and say, "I want a phone that's not giant. What's good?"
Yeah.
And we actually really struggle in the past, 6 months to talk about a new phone of that size. So if you're taking that smaller form factor, leaving the A8 chip in there, that's still going to perform really well. The battery life is probably going to be good. Apple has an opportunity to essentially say, "Hey, Tiny Hands, here's your ultimate phone for all of next year." And Tiny Hands is a lot of people. So that will probably work out for them all over the world.
Yeah, good point. There's also some rumors about the Apple Watch. It won't be out into the fall, according to Gurman, but there will be some software updates and some new bands. So that's kind of what we saw last fall, like not a whole new watch, but some bands and some partnerships like they have with Hermes. And they promise maybe his source says there will be totally new materials. I think the fall release is interesting because I think that the first Apple Watch came out in April, and then people had a lot of time to buy it and then stop wearing it. And by the holiday, I think a lot of people weren't that excited. But now if they release it in September, people will still be excited about it. It will be ready for everyone to buy. And then it won't be until January when there's a lot of people who say, "I stopped wearing my watch," which I have not. Still wearing it, still love it.
So you're not surprised to find that they are sticking to a yearly update cycle on the watch? Because that was also a kind of a question.
It sounds like the software will be updated, but the hardware itself won't be updated. So it won't be like a brand new watch. Because a lot of people are like, "Well, I just bought this watch. I don't want to have to buy a watch every year."
Right.
Which is a weird thing to say because people are on the year upgrade for the phones, and the phones are twice as expensive.
Yeah, we have different expectations for our wearables, though, for watches in particular. The same thing, was said about Android Wear devices when they were first coming out. It's like, "Oh, well, they're taxed less on the system level. So, we can just get a nice one and it's going to last for 2, 3, 4 years and it'll keep up pace." And it just turns out when you're talking about technology versus like an actual watch that doesn't have technology built into it, it gets as outdated as anything else.
And yeah,
I don't know
unless
if that's
you're
up
talking
here
about
or
calculator
what.
Watches. If you got a calculator watch, that thing is just always going to work. And so that's what we at Ars Technica recommend for all the avid technology people we know out there. Get your ones and zeros in order on your wrist.
Well, I mean, there's the thing that you can't FaceTime on your calculator watch, but then it's like, am I going to FaceTime on a watch? No, I don't even like to make calls. I'm like Jeb Bush.
FaceTime
so, like,
when you have math. Just do some math. You don't need friends.
It's true.
You can subtract.
You can actually create your own FaceTime if you use enough math. It's true. True story.
Yeah. 80085.
Right. Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Next up, we're going to talk with Sam about why anyone would play a game that consists of driving a bus into the desert. But first, let's thank Credit Karma. You've just made your New Year's resolutions. While you may not make it to the gym each and every day, I know I try and I make it twice a week. It's easy to take the necessary steps to get your finances in fighting shape. It all begins with checking your credit score. Most people don't know that their credit score, what it is, where it's at any given time. And honestly, you want to know that. And who can blame them? Many of the websites that offer credit reports are just kind of confusing to use. They come with hidden fees. They don't understand the codes, whatever it may be. Credit Karma does things differently. They offer truly free credit reports. And that's with no strings attached completely. And that includes credit cards. There's no credit card required here. So you don't have to give them that credit card to get your credit report. Credit Karma doesn't just show you a score and then send you out the door. They actually break things down for you so you can see how all of your actions can, have a direct effect on your score. For situations like if you use too much of your credit limit and your score, goes down as a result of that. I want to kind of avoid that. To make their services even easier to access, they also have free mobile apps for iOS and Android devices. It's no wonder 45 million members turn to Credit Karma to check their credit score. And you should too. You should check it out for yourself and get a free credit report. Visit creditkarma.com right now. You can get your free credit report by going there. You may not get to those crunches. I keep trying to, and it doesn't end up happening, but you can feel more confident at least about your finances this year. Get your free credit report today by visiting creditkarma.com right now. Check it out for yourself, and we thank Credit Karma for their support. All right, So just because we have Sam on for the whole show doesn't mean we can't talk about a little of the gaming news from the week. It turns out there's a couple of really interesting things happening this week. First, PC gamers looking to get in on some Mortal Kombat X downloadable content. I guess they're in for a little bit of a surprise. What's going on there?
Well, the computer version of Mortal Kombat X, which, by the way, was very good in terms of being a modern, blood-filled, punch another dude in the face kind of game.
Get over here, all that stuff.
Yeah, okay. It really did some good stuff with the series. But the computer version, as happens with some of these bigger ticket games that are primarily on console, like Xbox and PlayStation, not as good on computer, a little buggier, had some more issues on random configurations. And it looks like Warner Brothers is just flipping the bird to those 500,000 or so people who bought that copy, because the latest edition, this combat pack, which includes movie characters such as Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the Xenomorph from Alien, they are not coming. You're not going to be able to pay to add those characters to your computer fighting. Warner Brothers is saying only for Xbox and PlayStation platforms. And that's a bit of a bummer, because this is one of those fighting games that has been solid and has had additional content coming pretty regularly. They've already added some other movie characters to the series. And I just think it's kind of a bummer that two of the bigger ticket sci-fi super dork characters, you're not going to be able to pay for them. I just think that's a bummer for a series that otherwise had always been sort of stuck in the past, always felt really wooden. It was nice to see them finally making something that appeared to be for everybody, including computer gamers. But now, not so much. Bad move, WB.
Is this a signal for future releases from the same studio? Like, what do you think?
I just think that this is setting a bad trend for other games that are coming out. Batman's, the latest Batman game, the Arkham such and such, they all have Arkham blah, blah, blah. I always forget which one. But the latest of those Batman Arkham games, also by WB, terrible computer performance. They got pulled from Steam, brought back, and still had bugs. So basically, they're going to really need to do some sort of PR offensive, which they haven't done. This would have been a nice time to say, hey, PC gamer, sorry about that. Here you go. Instead, more...
Let's move on to Nintendo. They appear to be making some changes to the Japanese 3DS RPG called Fire Emblem Fates. They're removing a scene for U.S. and European gamers only. What exactly is being removed, and can you tell us why?
I have my hands on my face. This is just terrifying. Fire Emblem is a strategy RPG game where you take little people and take turns and move them around. This is the official 3DS moving military men around gesture.
We all know that. It's a universal.
Sorry to even be redundant. Point being, there's also relationship sort of simulation. You can bond characters in battle as friends or in romance. There's a character in the game who is female and gay named Soleil, and they show her for part of the bonding issue in the Japanese version, which has been out for a little while, has trouble talking to other women. A male character can spike her drink with a magic powder to make women appear as men and men appear as women, and then it ends up with a gay conversion. And so Nintendo has made it clear that that part has been totally removed, that kind of interaction. The magic powder will not be DLC or extra content made later in the game. It's just not going to happen. And which is the article that we had up at Ars Technica was linked to the last time we saw something from Nintendo. They built a game called Tomodachi Life, which was kind of Animal Crossing and The Sims, this sort of simulating an apartment complex and do quirky things with your me friends, the ones that you can create on your Wii and on your 3DS, where they did not allow any same-sex preferences. You could not create a character and make them gay, which meant that a lot of the stuff in the game, there's adoption, there's family building, all these sorts of things that really endear people to the Sim series, not possible unless you took your me character, which you'd usually import looking just like you, and saying, oh, sorry, you have to be straight, you have to be heteronormative, which I'm sorry, if you're going to make people say this is going to be my life and you're going to make them do all this sort of home recreation stuff, you have to be respectful of that. So they said it was too impossible to patch back in, and it looks like right now they're getting ahead of something and saying, okay, we can patch certain things. For example, gay conversion magic dust. So good move on Nintendo's part this year.
Yeah, or the drugging of the female characters also.
Just the whole really TMZ sounding ordeal. And the RPGs should not be that dramatic, in my opinion. So.
How about we take a step back to the bygone era of gaming, where none of that ever actually happened, as far as I'm, as far as I know, anyways. Atari is bringing a bunch of its old school games to Steam in a huge game pack, as well as enhanced features for modern day gamers. What exactly can we look forward to sometime this year? And am I going to be moved to buy this because this sounds fun?
Well, what's happening is we've got a giant pack of Atari classic games. The kind of announcement that you might go, you know, go to sleep over normally. But what's happening is that there's going to be online multiplayer added to a lot of these games, which is just a lot of effort for something like that. It's a real pain in the tuchus to try and do something like that on MAME, which is sort of a the classic illegal-ish emulator that you can use on your computer to play old games. So that's a really big deal to be able to have online multiplayer. They haven't announced exactly how the multiplayer is going to work, and that's going to be revealed later. But so also will be revealed what I think will be the best use of the Steam controller is Steam controller compatibility. There's a lot of things that Valve's controller, which came out late last year, does not do well. It's not really good at recreating the Xbox controller experience with your twin joysticks and buttons. It has these giant thumb pads, which really need specific games to work. And what better kind of thing for a very precise but move your thumb all over thumb pad than a game like Tempest or Asteroids? All of these, the wheel control games from the late 70s and early 80s, this is going to be a really cool way to be able to feel like you're doing Asteroids without having to buy some sort of crazy custom controller with a giant ball on it that collects a bunch of lint. And I had to help out with my uncle's arcade machine once, and you don't want to know what's underneath there in the little roly ball. It's a way better to do this
controller. Never remove the roly ball. You don't want to know what's under there. I understand. I got that with my my on-the-desk mouse, you know, with the roly ball underneath. You take that away, and you realize just how much stuff goes up there. But one question on this before we move on. Is this 100 of the arcade versions, or is it 100 of the, like, Atari 2600 versions? Or I wasn't able to determine which version it is.
Well, I'm pretty sure we're going to be getting arcade code whenever possible.
I hope
possible.
So, yeah.
I don't know that they're, unless they want to do that as an unlockable. It's very rare that Atari, with its the licenses they own, says, yeah, let's put out the crappier version of Pac-Man.
Let's spend all this time creating 100 versions of Atari 2600 games. Let's do it.
Unless they want to do the best April 1st game release of all time, in which case,
still, I think the multiplayer online aspect of this is what's really appealing. Yes. I would love that.
So finally, who could forget the legendary desert bus minigame where you literally just drive a bus down an empty desert road and try not to drift off the side? I forgot it. Jason had to remind me what it was. It is about.
I showed you the video and you watched it for 20 hours. Yes. And
I've been watching it all day long, but we haven't seen the end to this desert bus saga, have we?
Oh, goodness, no. The people who've decided to bring it back, which, by the way, the reason a lot of people, including Megan, would forget about it is because it never came out in stores. This was a geek curio. Someone found an unreleased game that was produced by Penn and Teller in the 90s. They had put out a gag series of books and videos in which you would set up the book or the video to show something after having studied up and seen what the gag really was. For example, a book would have certain pages that you had to carefully peel to actually access. You'd give the book to a friend, they try and read it normally and be fooled, blah, blah, blah. They made a video game like this where you would set up gags, where you'd hand your friend a controller. The controller wouldn't work, for example, and you would be playing against them. Your controller would be fine. You'd hold down certain buttons, go, oh, sorry, buddy, let's trade controllers, and they would still not be able to play, et cetera, et cetera. This was, Desert Bus was a minigame packed into this, and I love this, by the way, which is why I go on and on, in which it was a reaction to Janet Reno and other legislators in the early 90s saying that video games taught people to be killers. And they said, well, if that's really true, let's teach kids how to be mindless drone bus drivers. So they made a game in which you drove down a road for it took 8 hours to get 1 point. And they tricked it. They made it specifically so that even if you just put a rock on the controller, you would still have to tap on the D-pad to aim the steering wheel because your bus quite literally had an alignment problem. I mean, that's just a rich level of detail. Point being, Penn and Teller have returned to recreate this game for virtual reality. and they've enlisted Randy Pitchford, the head of Gearbox Software out of Dallas, Texas, to make this happen. It's going to be a non-commercial special version that's going to be provided specifically to charity organizations, including Desert Bus for Hope. Now, why would a charity organization need the worst video game of all time? Because they make tons of money for charity by torturing themselves playing this game. And people put money into the tip jar every year to add more hours. The more money they make, the more they have to play the game nonstop. Desert Bus for Hope is very easy to Google to look up what they've done. Raised a lot of money for Child's Play, which is a charity that supports children's hospitals. Really interesting thing for this to be brought back, essentially saying, oh, this torturous charity event you're doing, now you have to strap it to your face. And hopefully that'll bring on some more fundraising. And supposedly, they may even provide special downloadable versions for donations. Like, for example, if you bid a ton of money during the charity, you might be able to get your own VR copy of this very limited game. So cool idea for easily the funniest video game garbage concept in terms of that cult funny classic status.
So it's like the ice bucket challenge for VR.
Oh, if that ice bucket was dripping onto you for, you know, 96 hours in a row, you know, yes.
All right. Well, Ben Grant sent us a tweet regarding passwords. A couple of days ago, we talked about how to make stronger passwords and how you should use a password manager. And he pointed out that one password allows you to create pronounceable passwords as well. So instead of just gibbly garbly goop, you can create passwords like locust ossuary bose gland waffle windbag. Like locust ossuary bose gland waffle windbag, which I could say a dozen times.
Might take you a few times to remember that, but yes. I suppose you'd remember it.
I just generated one in one password right now that was quote unquote pronounceable. It is vow wook ek jaf ek ik. So go ahead and break into my Amazon with that one, ladies.
That didn't seem to work out so hot for you.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, thanks for everyone for your feedback. Yeah. We love to get your feedback on the show. So
yeah, tnt@twit.tv. Email us.
Yeah.
Or get in touch with us.
And after the break, we will see more of your feet. But first, let's thank PillPack, a sponsor of this episode. Okay, I'm going to throw some things at you guys. The rotary phone. The horse. The alarm clock.
Okay.
The book with pages.
Yes.
Okay. What do those things have in common?
They are things. They are inventions.
That we no longer use anymore.
That's true.
Yes.
Well, sometimes book with pages, but yeah.
you read book with pages?
I mean, every once in a while I have to reference one.
Oh, okay. You know? I don't read book with pages.
I don't sit down with it and read it. That's what audiobooks are for.
You know what else I don't use? Those little plastic things where you put the pill in for every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You don't need them anymore. Technology has made this better. The plastic pill dispenser thing with the opening, throw it away. Try PillPack. PillPack was founded by a second-generation pharmacist inspired to use technology and design to fix the pharmacy and deliver a better customer experience. Your PillPack arrives in convenient, recyclable dispenser. It has one easy-to-read label that includes an image of each medication and directions. Here's the PillPack right here. PillPack pre-sorts and delivers your medications and vitamins into these easy-to-tear packets. Aha! Easy to tear. My medicine comes right out. I can take it. PillPack also uses robots and digital imaging technology along with pharmacist oversight to ensure the accuracy of every PillPack. You know how I love robots, as long as they have human oversight, which these do. Mm-hmm. People are still an important part of the equation. PillPack's pharmacists are available 24/7 from the privacy of your own home. So no more long lines or awkward conversations at the pharmacy. You know you don't like to talk to people if you don't have to. No, I don't either. PillPack also proactively calls your doctor for you to manage all your refills so you will never run out. No extra costs beyond your standard copays. Shipping is always free. It's compatible with most major insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. When you sign up for PillPack, they make sure that your insurance is compatible before they transfer over any of your medications. Switching is easy. Sign up on their secure site and they take care of everything for you. PillPack was recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention. There's also a PillPack medication reminder app for the iPhone and the Apple Watch. PillPack is simple, convenient, and modern, and you will not believe how cool it is until you try it. So visit pillpack.com/twit to sign up now. Their site is beautiful. It only takes about 5 minutes to sign up. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you will get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/TWIT.
Thank you, PillPack. Thank you. Oh, wow. You suddenly have sunglasses on. Did it get really bright in there, or are you just suddenly cool?
I decided it's the cool segment. It's Friday. It's 4:50 p.m. on the West Coast, so we're just going to take it down.
I like that plan.
I like it, too.
Especially because the studio lights here are very bright.
Yeah.
Next Friday at this time, I'm going to bring some sunglasses.
That's what
elevate my cool factor.
Yeah, when we make the screen go away. Who knows what Sam's going to do back there?
Yeah, he might be eating ice cream. He might have sunglasses on.
Probably ice cream.
TNT's fan of the day today proves what we were talking about yesterday, that fans of the show just love to kick their feet up when they watch. Case in point, Alan J. Macias? I'm not sure what it is. On Instagram, who posted this picture of him doing just that. And this was, by the way, submitted before we mentioned this whole foot on the desk thing. So it's unprovoked. It's keeping it real. And we appreciate all of these that we are receiving from you guys, because we've been receiving a lot. Keep them coming. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook, Peach, whatever you happen to have, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. Hopefully we'll find it. Mm-hmm. You can also email it or whatever. Whatever you want to do.
So we can now continue with our series that I've decided to call VR Does What? We've already talked about tons of crazy stuff VR does.
I know.
But this is even crazier. You can now visit the Buckingham Palace on a virtual reality tour with Google Cardboard. That's why Sam put his glasses on, because he thinks the Buckingham Palace is really cool. This is part of Google's Expeditions Pioneer program for virtual field trips. If you don't have Google Cardboard, you can also watch it in YouTube and move around with a little arrow.
If you click the arrow inside the video, move it around, you can actually see all around you and everything.
Yeah. And that top left arrow right there, and which is hard because sometimes when you're looking at it, you feel like you need to be paying attention to the tour, but you can actually look at the ceiling in VR. And full disclosure, the tour does not allow you to touch the staircase made of gold or to drink actual tea with the queen. What do you guys, did you take the tour, Jason? This was your idea, so I think you
I skipped through the tour. Yep, that's what the carpet would look like if there wasn't a VR camera there. You can actually click in the video and just drag around, Alex. Yeah, that's better. There you go. And you've got a guided tour and, when are you ever going to have this kind of access? Huh?
Exactly.
This is, and I wouldn't necessarily call this like outright VR, but this is definitely immersive video. And I just love these kind of like walkthrough tours where it's kind of like choose your own adventure, kind of.
Google would call it VR. It's in cardboard. Isn't that VR?
Yeah, but. There's a difference between immersive video and VR. Like VR, I feel like, is more of an experience that you can interact with. This is like, 360 degree video that you can navigate around, sure, but you're not doing much more than that.
Well, that's a good question. Sam, would you call Google Cardboard VR?
No, I think Google Cardboard is a very cool way to give people a taste of the immersion, but Google Cardboard, more than any of the other platforms, suffers from what I call the ViewMaster effect, where there's a little bit of a 3D effect, but otherwise it sort of looks like there's just a giant projection screen wrapping around your view. I will say that I look forward to a museum simulator that really nails the experience of kids standing in front of whatever it is you're trying to look at, and people peering like way too closely at the little note next to the painting for way too long, and maybe that sort of awkward usher standing very close to you and saying nothing and maybe checking their Twitter feed.
I might be one of those people that stands looking at the note for too long, because sometimes I'm reading it. I'm like, how long am I supposed to stand here reading this so I look smart at the museum? That's what I totally do.
I mean, I totally spaced out about 2 seconds after starting to read it, but I feel like I probably should stay here so that anybody that's watching me thinks that I'm actually reading it.
You just have to nod very affectionately. That's sort of that firm, declarative, I love art kind of look.
Right. Yeah, at the end of looking at it, just kind of go... man, that was good.
Yeah.
And then, continue on.
Right.
You just say something neurotic, like the neoclassical era was better.
Got it.
I like that better, actually.
Okay. Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining us. Sam Moscovich is the culture editor at Ars Technica. And I know on Monday you wrote a story about how robots are taking all of our jobs. That was from a report from Davos.
Yes, I will not be employed at Ars Technica because a robot's taking my job. That's what happens when I write this stuff. It comes true.
Yep.
No, I am very excited. I've talked about a certain game many times since I've been on, and I finally get to post my review of it on Monday. So I look forward to talking about that. It's called The Witness. And spoiler, it's really good.
Yeah, I did have enjoyed talking to you about that game. It spurred a lot of conversations about games and novels and what's the difference. And like I said before, you know, it's the paper book. You don't need it anymore. Just all you need is a game. Just kidding. I read paper books too. Well, thanks, Sam.
When
I have to, when someone forces me.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sam.
At Sam Red on Twitter, and you can find him at Ars Technica. And we'll see you next week.
Yes, it's very good to be on. Have a lovely weekend, everybody.
All right, you too, Sam.
Take care.
All right, Monday's guest, by the way, will be Alex Wilhelm from Mattermark. He's going to be joining us for the full episode. Looking forward to that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. Of course, you can be a part of the show by liking us on Facebook. We're there. You can also leave comments on the videos and stories that we're posting there. We're kind of doing some clips and cut downs there. So check it out on Facebook. Email us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can hit us up on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you want to know about our upcoming guests or get behind-the-scenes gossip, you can subscribe to our newsletter. Sign up at twit.tv/newsletter. Jason and I are working on a little piece that explains what we do here a little bit, how the show is evolving. So that'll be in an upcoming newsletter. If you'd like to hear that, then sign up. And don't forget to subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. And we love to be tweeted at. We love tweets. We love them. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our live producer today, Alex Gumpel. You did great, even though you're not going to get that golden pencil.
Surface pen. Jason, we don't have
it's a pen.
Pencils.
Sorry. Oh. Someday you'll have the pencil. And all the folks who help us produce the show every single week. That's it for this week. We will see you next Monday on Tech News Today. Thanks, you guys. Bye.